Okay.
And I'll leave you mine.
Okay.
And I'll leave you a thumbs up when it's ready.
Thanks. 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 Okay, we're live, apparently, which is all very good. This is a real thrill for me to be using new technology. So good morning, everybody. Okay, yeah, you're a really responsive audience, typical audience of IT nerds. Don't want to engage in any sorts of personal interaction, but that's okay. I'm Tony Redmond, and today I'm here, I think, to talk about groups, which is okay, because I spent a lot of time looking at groups over the last year or so, trying to figure out just what these are good for and what they're not so good for. So that's what we're going to talk about. If anybody's disappointed about that topic, the door's over there. So what are we going to talk about? Well, we'll talk a little bit about how Office 365 groups fit in the overall scheme of things, some clients, talk about creation and lifestyle, talk about some of the extensions that exist today, about migration, because you might want to get to use Office 365 groups and instead of some of the other stuff that you've got already. And then, you know, I'm the type of guy that talks about stuff as it comes into my mind. So it's not necessarily what you see on the slide comes out of my mouth. That means you have to pay attention, which may or may not be a good thing. Anyway, so some context. Office 365, where is that? So it's really, really difficult to find out where Office 365 is at right now because Microsoft doesn't tell you. I mean, they don't go and publish all these great details about the number of mailboxes they have, number of Skype for Business users, number of SharePoint online sites, and all the rest of it. So you have to start picking up little nuggets of information that they release at press conferences. Are there financial details? Financial details don't lie. You can't lie to the stock exchange. Because if you do, somebody like Satya will go to prison. And that would be a very bad thing. So we can believe some of those things. So what we know is that right now, as of last week, when they reported their fiscal year 16 Q3 results, which are the results to the end of March 2016, Microsoft said, hey, we have 70 million active Office 365 users. That sounds good. 70 million active. That means that these are people who are alive and actually connect to the service at least once during a month to do something. Send a message, participate in a Skype conference, something like that. Now, the interesting thing about it is that the last figure they gave us was last November. And they said at that stage they had 60 million. So that's a growth of 10 million in about 4 or 5 months, depending on how you took the date for that last figure, which is pretty good. They told us as well that they're now at 10 billion revenue run rate for commercial cloud products. 10 billion for commercial cloud products means Azure, means Dynamics CRM and Office 365. They don't break out where Office 365 is. I suspect it's about 6 billion of that, but that's just pure suspicion on my point. They have an awful lot of companies using it, 1.2 million tenants. Most of these are small to medium tenants. And that's an important influence over Office 365 because I guess most people in this room are not small to medium. You're kind of enterprise type people. I'd be right. Most of you. Some of you are saying, oh, well, I might be a small to medium some days. But most of you are enterprise. So the reason why this is important is it explains some of the decisions that Microsoft makes in how they manage, organize, and develop Office 365. Because they try and make things easy for all of these folks that have replaced things like, you know, Exchange 2003 servers that were in cupboards, are being kicked underneath desks and stuff like that to provide an email service for 10 or 15 mailboxes in an office. They really do try and make it simple. Sometimes they oversimplify, especially if you've got an enterprise perspective, and sometimes they don't provide enough management. I think that's been a criticism that's been offered in the past. But it's because a large percentage of the Office 365 install base is in that small to medium segment. What else? Well, the data centers are rolling out around the world, which is good. We're seeing some interesting deployments in places like Germany, where Deutsche Telekom is taking on the role of a data trustee. Canada is coming online as well, so that's all good. Exchange Online is a major catalyst for people moving to the cloud. Why would that be? Well, it's because we know how to move mailboxes. We've been moving mailboxes for years, and moving to the cloud is just another destination. But also because email really has been proven as a cloud service for years and years and years, because let's look at Gmail. When did that first go into beta? 2004, 2005? It's just been around a long time. Hotmail, even longer. So people will actually buy the idea that you can run email in the cloud. And that's one of the reasons why I think folks are so relatively content to move workload, email workload in the cloud. Compare that to SharePoint. Moving SharePoint to the cloud is a little bit more difficult. The same migration utilities aren't there. SharePoint tends to be more customized than Exchange's. It's just more difficult to move. And hybrid connectivity is definitely the big selling point for Microsoft, because nobody else can do it. Nobody else can give you that mixture of on-premises and cloud. So that's pretty good. So that's the context. That's where Office 365 is. In terms of the fabric, and this is important because it really, really affects how groups come about. Previously, in the world of on-premises, engineers were constrained, or are constrained, because they can only develop for a particular target. And that target is the application. So if you've got an Exchange developer, they can only assume that Exchange will be on a box. They can't assume that anything else will be on a box. Well, they can, because Microsoft will force you to install some prerequisite products. But they can't assume that you're going to always have SharePoint there, or you're always going to have Skype there, right? You're really constrained by that vision or that boundary which exists for a single product. It's different in the cloud. It's different for a number of reasons. Firstly, the cloud, in this case Office 365, always has these applications available. An application developer can assume that Skype is going to be there, can assume that SharePoint is going to be there, can assume that Office 365 video is going to be there. So it's completely different. The second thing that they can assume is that everything is going to be integrated well. Now, I don't know if there's anybody in this room who ever managed to get SharePoint 2013 and Exchange 2013 configured to work together. Has anybody managed to do that? It was a pain in the bum. It was like 42 different steps, three of which involved you getting up on your hind quarters, standing upright, and swearing in the general direction of wherever Redmond is at the time. Okay? In other words, it was pretty hard. But the point is that in the cloud, everything works because Microsoft makes it work. You don't have to assume that you have to configure this and configure that and configure the other. It'll all be there. So this creates what I call an applications part bin that engineers can go and say, well, you know what? I need a bit of this and need a bit of that. I need a mailbox, so I've got Exchange. I need some document storage or some file storage. I've got SharePoint. I need to be able to make voice calls. I've got Skype. I don't have to recreate the wheel. I can just use these bits of different applications. So the environment that you have in Office 365 is very, very, very different to what you have on premises. Right? Very, very different. In terms of collaboration, it's traditionally been a very bad place, I think, for Microsoft. Years and years and years ago, we used to fight against Lotus Notes. Well, those of us that were in the Exchange community fought against Lotus Notes. And there were the famous battles, for example, in 98, when the Exchange conference was held in Boston, home of Lotus Notes. And, you know, the buses that were there to take people off down to the Microsoft keynote in the Fleet Center had Lotus Notes along the side. Your bus is sponsored by Lotus. It was kind of cute. You know, but that was the kind of thing that people did. Microsoft if you look at the 20 years of Exchange, has really tried its best to introduce collaboration technology, but it has failed. Public folders are, as they were at one stage, public fora. I mean, when they were introduced in 96, they were great. You could play chess with public folders. Everybody thought it was wonderful, but they faded out, right? And over the last 20 years, I have seen so many different attempts. Anybody remember CDO routing objects? That came along around 1999. It was work for Exchange workflow. That died a death within about 4 months. So the point is that Microsoft has tried and tried and tried. But Exchange has been a fantastic email engine and SharePoint has been a fantastic document management engine, but neither of them are any good at collaboration, really, when you get down to it, when you compare it to what's out there in the market. Yammer was bought by Microsoft a few years ago, 2012. And it's an interesting application. It's an interesting way of collaboration, but it's a way of collaboration, I think, which is well suited for particular circumstances and particular companies who have particular needs. For example, if you look at the Office 365 IT network that supports over 85,000 people today, great use of Yammer. Fantastic use of technology to meet a need. But is it any better than Exchange at email? Absolutely not. Is it any better than SharePoint at document management? Absolutely not. Does it even do that kind of thing? Not really. So it's a collaboration technology that's okay in its own way, but not perhaps in the way that everybody wants to need it. So a new need, a new way of working was really required. And that's what this thing is, this Office 365 groups. It's basically a way of saying, well, you know what? We're going to be built off different components. So you've got a mailbox from Exchange, you've got a calendar from Exchange, you've got a document library from SharePoint, you've got a shared OneNote notebook. And because all of these bits are brought together and they exist for every group, they provide a platform for collaboration that can then be built out with other integrations. So you've got integrations for Skype for Business. So for example, you can add an Office 365 group and set it up as a conversation. Click. Everybody in the group is involved in a con call, that kind of thing. We've got Power BI, dynamic CRM integrations too, where you can use an Office 365 group as the basis of doing some particular work. And now we have Office 365 Planner, which is in first release at the moment and due for general availability, probably at the end of June, which gives people the ability to do group oriented task management. It's actually quite a nice thing. So all of these things are coming about through Office 365 groups. And that kind of says, well, you know, that looks like an awful lot like collaboration. It looks like collaboration that might actually work. So in terms of an overview, what have we got? Comparing them to what's out there in other things. Well, you've got, these are mail enabled objects, so they can groups can create and send mail, you can receive mail, you can even give people the ability to send on behalf of a group in the same way as you can give them the ability to send on behalf of a shared mailbox. So they're very much a mail-enabled object. They're used for control of access to resources, such as the documents that are stored in a group library, but they're not security principles. They have what seems to be a OneDrive document library. It's now, that's kind of old. It's just been refreshed. It's now really become a fully functional SharePoint document library. And of course, OneDrive for Business and SharePoint, they're mixed together. So you've got this full functional document library that's now available to anybody in the group. But here's the thing, the access is the same for every group member. You don't have kind of granular access as you have in other SharePoint document libraries. Groups can be private or public. If they're public, anybody can join them. If they're private, it's restricted to membership, which you will set up. Now, up to now, groups, once you created them as private or public, could not be changed. As of next week, you'll be able to change a group from private to public or vice versa as the need arises. Right now, group membership is limited to Office 365 accounts. There's a big push on to get external access going. External access is in test within Microsoft, and I believe it will show up any day now. And that's important not only for Office 365 groups to allow you to collaborate outside of your organization, but it's even more important for some of the integrations that they've got. Take Office 365 Planner. When you think about how people go and organize projects, a lot of projects have got external resources, people that work in the project, contractors and stuff like that. Today, those folks have got to have an Office 365 account in your tenant to participate. Very soon, once Office 365 groups allows external access, those folks will be able to use an identity, just any Microsoft account, right? So something like a live.com account or whatever, they'll be able to get it. Today, external correspondents can interact with the group. By interact means that they can send email to the group. And as if they send email to the group, those messages show up in the group conversations. But they can't interact with it in terms of sharing documents or looking at the shared notebook. That will come about as soon as external access has been formalized. Huh? There's a REST-based API. It's part of the whole Microsoft Graph API. So you can go and use that. And there's PowerShell. Not as much PowerShell as I would like, because PowerShell is great, but it's there. And recently, groups gained this thing called connectors, which allows you to bring in data from external sources and store snippets of that data in the group. We'll talk about that later on. So that's a brief overview of what groups actually deliver today. So out of the box, you get a group object. It's created in Azure Active Directory. You get a group mailbox, which is created immediately. And then you get a group document library, which is created in a hidden site collection within SharePoint. That is actually provisioned the first time users need to use the library. So there isn't a rush to go and provision it. There's a little bit of a difference there between the way Exchange and SharePoint set things up. But essentially, out of the box, you create a new group, you're going to get a shared mailbox, and you're going to get a document library. In terms of clients, what have you got? Oh, you've got Outlook Web App. I hate the new name. That marketing-driven Outlook on the Web. What's Outlook on the Web? I mean, what's it? I mean, what does that mean, Outlook on the Web? How can you be on the web? Think about it. You can't be on the web. It doesn't make sense in English. Maybe it makes sense in Dutch or French. I haven't thought about that. But Outlook on the web makes no sense in English. Anyway, OWA, shall we keep it at that? OWA, you've got a nice groups client. And it was the first client, and it's the client that gets all the new features first. Which is kind of interesting. It's the way Microsoft is using OWA as almost its, what would you call it? It's experimental client. You know, all the new features show up in OWA first, right? And they may last there for a while and disappear. Or they might be improved and come back again. Now look at PeopleView. Do you remember PeopleView? It appeared in OWA. It was great. Seemed like a good idea at the time anyway. It appeared at the end of 2014. By May 2015, it was dead. Gone, forgotten, never to be spoken of again. But I just find that the way Microsoft used OWA as a development platform, I find that very interesting. So you got that. Then you got the Outlook Groups app, which is available for iOS, Android, and Windows Phone. It's actually quite nice. And we have Outlook 2016. That was actually a very, very important and strategic development for groups. Because although you have these other clients, Outlook is where people spend their time. Outlook is still the most important client for Office 365. It's hugely important for Office 365. I mean, you look at any of the surveys, they'll tell you that OWA access is probably 10 or 15%. The rest of it is mobile access to a certain degree. And then there's this big, huge chunk of Outlook access. Outlook is where people spend their time when they're working with Exchange Online in particular. So groups will be located by AutoDiscover. Part of the XML manifest that's returned by AutoDiscover will tell Outlook whether any groups are available. Interestingly, you have the OST file for Outlook, which is for your mailbox. You now will have a GST file where groups content is stored. So you'll have two offline files, right? GST and OST. The OST and the GST are functionally very much the same. They've just got different purposes. The conversational view that you see is slightly different to the inbox, where the newest item appears in the bottom. I haven't still got my head around that yet. I still look at the top, expecting to see the newest item up there. But the developers think this way work. I don't know. And I'm really happy that users can like items. I really am happy about this. You can see how delighted I am that you can like. But hey, look at me. I've got gray hair. You know, likes, I don't know. Anyway, so let's go on. In terms of admin, we have the new admin center. They're all there. We have Outlook web app in the people section. You can set up new groups there. And we also have PowerShell. Now, in fact, that's not fully complete because some of the integrations can also set up new groups and manipulate groups. For example, Power BI can. But there are some problems there as we'll come to it. All right. In terms of PowerShell, we have two sets of commandlets. The first is for manipulating group properties. So that's where you've got the new, the set, the get, remove, unified group. The second is for manipulating group membership. Okay, and there are three sets of membership per group. They're the owners, the members, and the subscribers, right? So the owners are the people who do admins. The members are the rest of everybody else. And subscribers are members who want to receive email updates from the group. Okay, so that's the way it works. In terms of synchronization, because of course you know that there are multiple directories inside Office 365. I'll just put them up there. Each one of the workloads has its own directory. Did everybody know that? Okay, so you've got Exchange Online Directory Services, EXODS is used for Exchange, and SharePoint has its own, and then Skype has its own. Well, in this case, we're only concerned with two. But if you remembered earlier on, I said that when you set up a new group, you get a mailbox created immediately, and then later on, you get the SharePoint library. Well, what actually happens is that the new group is immediately created in Azure Active Directory, because Azure Active Directory is the master. And then at the same time, a synchronization is pushed down, a transaction is pushed down to Exchange Online to say, hey, new group has been created, we need a new mailbox, okay? And then a similar transaction is pushed over to SharePoint to say, you know, SharePoint, we're gonna need a hidden site collection here to store that document library and the shared OneNote notebook, okay? So this is how it happens. AAD is the master directory, but the objects are also stored in these workload-specific directories. Why does that happen? I mean, why is EXODS in there? Anyone know? Why would you use it? Well, simple. Think about it like this. There are some properties of mail-enabled objects that don't exist in Azure Active Directory. Azure Active Directory is there to be the core, if you will, across all of Office 365. But there are some properties about mail-enabled objects, like their email addresses, like their membership and stuff like that, that may not want to be existing up in the main directory. So each one of the workloads has got its own directory to handle workload-specific attributes. For example, SharePoint. SharePoint has its own profile. All that profile information would be stored in the SharePoint Online directory service. So it doesn't have to go anywhere near AAD, right? The other reason why is that these workload-specific directories provide a local cache to allow the applications to keep on working even if there was some interruption to the connection to AAD. Right? So there's a good reason to have these. Anyway, we won't spend a lot of time. Just assume that this synchronization happened. It's magic. It's wonderful. Everything wonders. Okay. So in terms of creating groups, you can create them through OWA, Power BI, Dynamics CRM, and soon Outlook. You can also do them through the mobile app. Right now, group creation is governed by an OWA mailbox policy. This was a decision that was taken a long time ago when OWA was the only client. Yes, sir. We'll get there. Thank you for that. You got to work on the timing, though. Just wait for the slide to come up, and then I can say, my next slide. Anyway, I don't think it is my next slide. Anyway, bear with me. Can I go back to my story now? Okay. Oh, that's okay. That's okay. It's at least a proof that somebody in the audience was alive, you know, which is always good. Anyhow, a long, long time ago, where men were men and everybody was happy, the first client was OWA. So Microsoft took a decision for groups. This is way back, November 2014. They said, well, it makes sense because the only client we've got is OWA, and we will control the creation of groups through an OWA mailbox policy. So an OWA mailbox policy, everybody knows what that is, right? Because you're all IT professionals. Okay, good. Now, everything was happy. The whole world was happy with this until new clients started to arrive. And the first one that came along was Power BI. And guess what? Those Power BI guys don't know a thing about OWA. And they care very little about OWA mailbox policies. So they went straight ahead and allowed everybody to go and create new groups, whether or not the policy existed. And then the Dynamics CRM guys came along and they know nothing about OWA as well. So they ignore the policy as well. And of course, the mobile apps also ignore the policy. So in fact, everybody ignores the policy except OWA and Outlook, the Exchange clients. That is to be expected. This is going to be addressed very soon because Microsoft is going to shift away from using the OWA mailbox policy and it will go to an AAD policy that will be respected by all applications. Okay, and I think that will be a very good thing. Now, by default, if you don't set up a policy, anybody in the organization can create a group. I think this is a horrible idea, mostly because I have been bitten in the bum by this in the past. Anybody remember public folders? And when administrators said, oh, everybody can go and create public folders. Yeah, preferably at the root, because that's where you want all public folders to be created, right? And what do we end up with? A mess. What are we cleaning up today? That mess, as people do migrations. I mean, if you talk to some of the folks dealing with the really large public folder hierarchies, like the ones with 450,000 folders, 20 terabytes of data, they'll tell you that maybe 40% of all of the folders in that hierarchy are just subfolders of subfolders or subfolders, leading you down to where the actual data is. And that came about because everybody was allowed to create folders as they wanted. And you end up with folders that have nothing in them, folders that were used three times, folders that people have forgotten about, folders that nobody wanted to use in the first place, but management thought was a good idea, and so forth and so on. So when Microsoft came along to do groups, they said, this is a great new way of collaboration. And to encourage collaboration, we're going to let everybody create groups. Now, again, I ask you, does this seem like a good idea? And any enterprise administrator that I've spoken to and explained this to has come back and said, no, that doesn't seem like a good idea. I'd like some control. I'd like some control. So it is a good thing to put in place one of these policies to stop people going and creating Bob's favorite coffee shop group, or places I want to see before I die group, or, you know, good restaurants in the vicinity group. You know, these are all very worthy collaborative efforts, but I ask you, do they add any value to the business? And that's essentially what we're going to have to do. Now, in the future, another thing that Microsoft has published on the roadmap is a life cycle control of groups, which basically that's something like exists today for SharePoint sites, where you say, you know what, a group is going to expire after 3 years, or a group might expire after 5 years, or a group might expire if nobody has used it in the last 2 years, something like that. Now, we don't have the exact details yet, but that is coming. That is the direction. So in the future, again, just to summarize, what I think you're going to see is here, you'll have an AAD policy that will control groups for all clients, and you will have a lifecycle policy management to help you control groups, which is probably a good thing. Yes. Oh, data retention policy is a different thing. We'll come to that. Sorry, the question for those listening at home, was that all about data retention policies and stuff like that? And I said, we'll come to that. Okay, so deletion. This is another little sore area at the moment, because if you delete a group, it goes away. Everything goes away. Can't be recovered. It's gone to the byte wastebasket and been immediately expunged. And a few administrators have noticed this to their cost. Soft delete is coming. It should come relatively soon. And this will allow you to put the information created by a group, either the group mailbox or the document library, in the respective recycle bin or retention area for those objects. So for example, the mailbox will end up in the database where it's located, and it will be retained there for the deleted item retention, or the deleted mailbox retention period, which is 14 days, I believe, by default. The documents will end up in the SharePoint recycle bin and will remain there for 90 days. But we don't have that yet. So while we don't have it, this is a thing that if you're using groups at the moment, just watch it, because if you delete a group, it goes away. In terms of membership, we talked about this earlier, three types of members: admins, the owners, members, and subscribers. And the big difference here, I think, is that subscribers are the folks who receive updates, but only updates to conversations and meeting requests. They receive those by email, right? They don't get updates about a new update has been applied to the group notebook. They don't get updates if a new document has been checked into the document library. This is an exchange-only thing. Membership is maintained as a set of links to the AAD object. That's fair enough. And as we said earlier, external people can send email to the groups, but they can't yet be members. Again, that's coming. Now, in terms of the mailbox, the Exchange mailbox, only two folders are supposedly used. That would be the calendar folder, where calendar items are stored, and the inbox, which is where all of the conversations are stored. Actually, as it turns out, other folders are stored, are used as well. The sent items folder being the big one, because if you've got any client that uses the REST-based API to create messages, they will go into the sent items folders. All right, so you can see that there. Most of the Exchange mailbox commandlets will operate against groups. I say most. It's a changing horizon. So I could give you a list today that work, and they might not work tomorrow. That's because underneath the surface, there's a lot of change here. going on. But most of the exchange things, you know, for example, get mailbox statistics, get mailbox folder statistics, as you see there, that works. So the library is a modified version of the SharePoint document library. It's recently got a fairly big, fairly major UI overhaul that removed an awful lot of the problems that people had with the document library. There are still some restrictions, you know, the things like branding, but workflow, check in, check out, versioning, all that stuff works, and it works well. Now, one thing that still doesn't work well is the OneDrive synchronization client. You know that there are two OneDrive synchronization clients available today, right? The old one is a thing called groove.exe, based on a technology that goes back a long time. That is the one that deals with group document libraries. The new synchronization client, OneDrive.exe, which shares technology with the consumer-based version, is not yet capable of dealing with SharePoint document libraries, including those used by groups. Microsoft has said that this is an issue that they're working on, but really we don't expect this problem to be fixed until the end of 2016. So all it means in terms of administration is that users who have a mixture of OneDrive for Business and SharePoint online are going to have two OneDrive clients operational on the PC. The older client, this groove.exe, the one that deals with Office 365 groups, is a little bit flaky compared to the newer version. It sometimes doesn't work so well, especially over extended network links. If you've got a high-speed link and you're close to Office 365 data center, it seems to work okay. I, for example, have no problem whatsoever using the client in Ireland, I guess because the data center is a couple of kilometers away. Paul Cunningham, who does a lot of work for me, he's based in Australia. When he tries to get to that same library, he has a few problems. But that's his fault because he lives in Australia. It's no problem to do with OneDrive. I say here that the best experience with the library is with Chrome and IE. Edge is a supported browser, but Edge just doesn't work so well sometimes. So if you want to use Edge, go ahead, be my guest. I believe that the others are better. Compliance, everybody's favorite topic. So the mailboxes don't support exchange retention policies. So you can't say, you know, every item over 30 days clear out. That doesn't happen, right? Group mailboxes can be placed now on hold using Exchange eDiscovery in-place holds. So you can place them on hold just to stop administrators deleting items or our users deleting items out of the mailbox, out of conversations. Group document libraries can now be added to content searches. These are different to Exchange eDiscovery searches. These are new searches that are available through the Security and Compliance Center. Okay, this is the long-term direction for compliance in Office 365 will be to use these content searches, because content searches can do Exchange mailboxes, public folders, and SharePoint and OneDrive. So they can do them all. And you can add group mailboxes and you can add group document libraries to these searches. So that works okay. It's worth noting that posts, any email sent to group conversations will go through the Exchange transport system. They used to do this. They used to, weirdly, there was a bypass mechanism, but they now do, so that's good. And rules will be applied, including DLP, data loss prevention rules will be done, and banned words. So there's a lot of people that are using these in educational environments where they want the students not to swear in group conversations, and they have transport rules set up to do that. That all works now. It didn't a little while ago. Now, in terms of extensions, we talked about Power BI. We talked about Planner and Dynamics CRM. The big news recently was these connectors. There are 52 odd connectors that have now been set up. And the basic idea is that you have all of these data sources out there in the network that you might want to consult on a fairly regular basis and share within a group. Blogs, Twitter, Trello, you name it, they're all out. Salesforce, they're all out there. What a connector will do is it will make a connection, a link, to a data source on a regular basis, say every hour, every 3 hours, whatever. And it will apply a filter to the information that it's trying to get from that data source. And then it will extract that information and create a set of cards inside the conversations, the group conversations. Now, a card is not a full item. So, for example, if you go to a blog and you say, I want to get everything that Michael van Horenbeek writes on his Van Hybrid blog and bring that into a group, what will actually come in every time Michael posts to the blog is just a card to say, a new blog post is now available for you to read, and here's a snippet of it. So it might be 100 characters, it might be 100 words, whatever the connector is set up. But if you want to see the full content, you have to go back to the data source. So the idea here is that you might have, for example, a group that's set up so that all corporate Twitter feeds will go into the one place, so that users be able to go to that one place, go to that group, either on their mobile app or they'll go on their Outlook or OWA, and they'll be able to see that. It might also merge in all corporate blog feeds, everything the corporation is doing out there. The intention is that there are going to be more and more connectors added. There's a webhook connector, which allows a certain amount of customization. I think this will be a pretty popular thing over time. In terms of migration, there's no way currently available to move data into an Office 365 group. Now, there is an effort underway. I'm not sure that they have actually released it yet. Binary Tree is coming up with a way to move data from a public folder into an Office 365 group. I believe that will be in the next version of E2E Complete. I believe that's just about to ship. So that'll be the first one. So I'm correct there, but I won't be correct very soon. If you try and do this with Outlook, there's no drag or drop, anything like that. That's all blocked. Microsoft is also looking at this area. I know that some of the people in the group's development team would very much like to be able to provide a migration path from public folders, from SharePoint sites, from OneDrive sites, from a file share, whatever. They're saying, yeah, there's lots of stuff we could import to groups to provide, to build out a group. Let's go and do this. But there's nothing there right now. In terms of distribution groups, which is a big, big, big area of interest, Microsoft is working on a facility that will allow people to go and migrate distribution groups. And there are lots of challenges with distribution groups. For example, the fact that a current Exchange distribution group can contain lots of different mail-enabled objects. You know, it can have a public folder, it can have a mail contact, it can have a user on your tenant, it could have some hybrid users, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Exchange doesn't really care because as far as it's concerned, it's just going to send a message to those users. However, when you move over to an Office 365 group, remember that at present, everybody inside that group has got to be a user inside your tenant. So you can't just take a distribution group and say, make that an Office 365 group. You've got to do some processing in between. You've also got things like nested distribution groups, which are a bit of a challenge. You know, figure out group, build a complete recipients list, and then maybe migrate that. And then, of course, you've got dynamic groups, which are supported by Office 365 groups, but cost you extra money. That's one of the things I think Microsoft has got to actually improve on. If you want to use a dynamic Office 365 group, it's based on an AAD query. That's okay. Everybody understands that mechanism. Exchange has been doing that since query-based distribution groups were introduced in Exchange 2003. However, query-based Office 365 groups are a premium AAD feature. So they cost you $6 a month. And they don't just cost you $6 a month for the people who set up the groups. They cost you $6 a month. If you read the licensing agreement, it's $6 a month for any user account that it comes under the scope of a group. Now think about that. If you built a dynamic group for the entire company, or you made a mistake with your query, and mistakes happen, you could suddenly expose your company to, oh, that's an extra 2,000 AAD premium licenses. Thank you very much. Just like that. So that's a thing to be careful about. Anyway, if you do have a simple Exchange distribution group, there are two ways of doing it. One is a script that's available in the TechNet script gallery. I wrote that a long time ago. And the other is a thing called the Hummingbird utility that Microsoft wrote that's available in GitHub. And you can take that and do whatever you like with it. All right. At the moment, there's no supported method to move a SharePoint team site, which a lot of people are interested in, over to an Office 365 group. But again, there's some work going on there. I think I've covered most of this in the comments I just made about dynamic groups. It's the same type of thing that if you've ever used Exchange to build a dynamic group, you'll be very, very familiar with the OPATH type queries. There's a query builder. You just go and build up whatever you want to locate the users that you want to cover, and you just go and execute that, and all is well. Okay. However, unlike Exchange, the only way you can manipulate these queries is through the AAD console. You know, the Exchange, you can actually do it all through PowerShell if you want. You can't do that with these type of dynamic groups. They have to be actually done through AAD. Now, hybrid. The question. Office 365 groups do not exist on-premises. Office 365 groups will never exist on-premises. Why? Because of that fabric discussion we had earlier on. They depend on so many different bits. And you could say, as an on-premises administrator, I will absolutely make SharePoint and Exchange work together. And they would say, yeah, maybe you could by spending 40 hours a week making them work together, but it's something that probably wouldn't work elsewhere. So Microsoft has been very, very clear on this. Office 365 groups are not going to appear on-premises. Right. So because they are a cloud object, they're managed from the cloud. I mean, that's the basic thing. You always manage your objects from their host platform. You can synchronize them back so that they appear in the on-premises GAL. When they appear in the GAL, they look like distribution groups. Okay? And that's what you can essentially use them as. They're a form of distribution groups. You can send mail to them, that's fine, no problem. Now, when we get to a point where external users are allowed access to group resources, it may be possible for an on-premises user to be added as a full member of a group, in which case they will be able to gain access, but we're not there right now. Okay, happy with that? Good. You're happy. That's always good to make somebody happy. Okay, some people have asked too about Yammer. Office 365 groups in Yammer, because Microsoft, I think, for the last 10 months have been saying, be patient, be patient, be patient, be patient. It's coming. Is there any Yammer administrator in the room? One. Congratulations. I'd say you're happy. Anyway, I think when you compare these two, and there is a bit of a fight, it's a bit of a religious fight. I think it breaks down fairly simply. Office 365 groups are intensely attractive to people that come from the Exchange background, because they're email distribution groups. But there are email distribution groups that solve a lot of problems that distribution groups have never been able to solve in the past. I mean, how many people have added a public folder to a distribution group just to make sure that every item sent to the group is archived? That happens so many times. So if you want to think about it, an Office 365 group is a very modern and up-to-date example of how to do that. As I said before, the Outlook support is a big, big deal, and groups can replace that old kind of public folder distribution group combination. Yammer, by comparison, isn't really about email. It's about online debate, online discussion, threaded conversations. You have to be online to do it. Sure, they have email notifications going out, and some Yammer advocates have said, oh, yeah, it's easy. You just apply a pile of Outlook rules, and you can have all your Yammer conversations organized, and you can participate like that. But you don't get the true Yammer experience if you do it through Outlook. There is no good integration. Right now, there is no link-up between Office 365 groups and Yammer. There is a very interesting property within the groups called Yammer email address, which I suspect eventually will be the link. Microsoft has talked about some ability coming, but we haven't seen anything, and we've been waiting for about 10 months. I suspect that the way it will happen, and this is pure speculation from my point of view, is that you will have the ability to associate a Yammer group with an Office 365 group. And so if something gets posted to the Office 365 group, it'll get posted to Yammer and vice versa. And that would allow both sets of users to use the client or the interface or the application they want in their own way. Okay. So some known issues just for you to understand. Clearly, the no soft delete capability, but that should be solved soon. It is an issue because if you do delete a group right now, you are going to lose data. So don't do that. Migration, I think, from other data sources, that is an issue. It's going to be solved, I think, over the next year or so. As I spoke of earlier on, Binary Tree have got something going. Microsoft have got some things going. And I know some other migration companies are interested in this space. And I expect that we'll see some announcements. I think a lot of announcements will happen at Ignite this year in September in Atlanta, because there, you know, that's a big place. Everybody's going to come together and they'll have all these new utilities and add-ons and extensions and whatever. So I expect we'll see some stuff there. There is an inability to move data from one group to another. There's also an inability to archive a group. That's also been asked by people, but you can't do either of those things right now. A big issue, I think, in some places is that documents in private libraries don't show up in Delve. Now, Delve is the search on steroids for Office 365. And you ask yourself, well, why would these documents not show up? And it's actually quite logical. A group is an identity. All of the members of a group share that identity. Delve only shows you what you're allowed to see. But Delve can't necessarily resolve that group identity to be absolutely 100% sure that it's showing you the right thing. That's the way it's been explained to me. And I think it's reasonable for Microsoft to get this right without rushing something out and perhaps ending up with a situation where Delve shows something that it shouldn't. Delve already has an issue, if you want to think of it as that, in that it exposes so many bad practices that have happened in the past about the way people have shared the documents and set protections on documents in SharePoint sites. And, you know, Delve exposes all of those very, very, very quickly when it shows you information that you're supposed to see. So I know they're working on that, and I suspect that that will be solved too in the next few months. I think there is still some confusion about Yammer and Office 365 groups, but if you come from Exchange, I wouldn't go anywhere near Yammer. Just use Office 365 groups. You'd be much, much, much happier. There's no support at the moment in EWS for groups. So there's nothing for Outlook for Mac. That'll be solved when Outlook for Mac moves over to the new REST-based API. And my favorite one that I've been complaining for a long, long, long time, is that you can't remove a single item from a conversation. Now, you may look at me and say, well, why would that be important? Well, think about this. Let's imagine that your CEO or some senior manager attempts to show that they're cool. And I know that you're all struggling with this. Senior manager, cool. That just doesn't work. Well, sometimes it does. Anyway, they come in and they try and participate in a conversation and they make a mistake. And they say, get rid of that. Get rid of that. I want that item gone. What are you going to say as an administrator? Actually, once you've posted something, that it's there forever. You know, so I think that's a really bad thing. They should get rid of that. And nobody's listening to me, but I keep on asking. Okay, in summary, this is a very fast-moving area. Groups were launched in November 19, 2014. And so we're 18 months on, and a tremendous amount of new functionality has happened over that time. A tremendous amount of change has happened over that time. And so it's an area you really can't take your eyes off, because if you do come back a couple of weeks later, you'll find that everything has changed. And I suspect that that's going to happen for the next while. They still have a lot of challenges in administration. You know, things like soft delete, things like lifecycle management, things like migration, things like archiving and compliance. These are areas that are not yet good enough in groups. Absolutely not yet good enough in groups. But you know, they are working on it. And as I say, I think a lot of things you're going to see. May 4, there's a big announcement, SharePoint for the future. I believe that there are some groups announcements in that, so stay tuned there. And I think Ignite in September is going to be a very, very big set of announcements around groups. So stay tuned for that as well. But in summary, you know, at the end of the day, if you're an exchange organization, this is something that should interest you. As you move over to Office 365, Office 365 groups are absolutely a natural way to collaborate and work together based on technology that people know well. They know OWA, they know Outlook, they can work with groups. And it's really a fantastic way of making Exchange and SharePoint work together in a way that I have never seen before. So I think this is a good thing. Okay, so that's all I had to say. If anybody's got questions, I'll ignore them now. Sorry. Oh, I've got to answer a question. Sorry. Yes, sir.
The way of Microsoft to get rid finally from private folders.
Is this the way for Microsoft to finally get rid of public folders? Well, they'd have to have a migration facility first. You know, they'd have to have the ability to go and take a public folder and move it across. I don't think this is actually very difficult, because when you think about it, a public folder has a set of users, a set of access rights, and all the rest of it, and then it's got content. You can read the access rights and you can parse them and figure out who would be the owners, who would be the administrators, who would be the users and the members. That's all easy enough. The big issue that we've got in terms of migration today is taking the content across. Because when you think of what could be in a public folder, you can have mail items, you can calendar items, you've got contact items, you can have documents. Okay? So the first thing is you've got to be able to get access to all of that information. There's no real API available to do that right now. EWS, I don't think, can do that. I don't think EWS can do it. So you're down to MAPI. And God love you, MAPI is horrible, unless you know MAPI. And you have a copy of the Inside MAPI book, which has been out of print for the last 16 years. So there is an issue there. And really, I think this is an area Microsoft has got to cover. And what I would really like to see them, and I have said it to them, is that it would be really cool if you guys just gave us a commandlet, kind of suck data from public folder. I think is suck a verb? Suck could be a verb. Suck dash public folder. Destination group. Data type, go, something like that. If they did that, then we could go and build those utilities ourselves. But you know, to answer your question, I don't think it can be a way of getting rid of public folders unless a migration path exists. Is that fair? There was a question in the back. No, you forget, sir. Yes. So the question is, the library for groups, compilers, documents and folders doesn't do metadata. I think by the with the latest refresh, if you go and look at the library settings, you'll find that all the metadata that you want to play around is there. However, I haven't done it, so I can't tell you how effective it is. Go for it. It's there. It's a canvas for you to explore. Okay, anybody else? Sir. Great question. So the question is, how ready is this technology to fit into large enterprises? That's the basic thing. So as I've said, there are some administration challenges. And it depends how seriously your organization takes those administration challenges. For example, if you buy into the overall concept and say, oh, everybody should be able to buy, create a group and be happy and share and all the rest of it, go for it. On the other hand, if you think that soft delete, I absolutely have got to have, I've absolutely got to have better administration, I've got to have better compliance, then those are issues that will stop you deploying. Now, in saying that, again, I'm going to say there are some changes coming that will address a lot of those problems in the next few months. So, I guess my answer is yes, I think that it is ready, but you've just got to be careful. You know, I would not implement groups inside an large organization today without immediately restriction on creation. Absolutely immediately restricting. I would allow, I might build a little mailbox, a shared mailbox to allow our users to request the creation of group and have IT go and provision it. I might do that. I think that's a good way of doing it. So there are ways around it that stop people making mistakes, like deleting things and whatever. There are a way around it for in terms of compliance. You know, for example, not having private groups unless absolutely required. So I think there's a way of for many large organizations to live with Office 365 groups right now. I absolutely do, and I think they're worthy to look at. Because let's face it, if you've been using distribution groups and public folders, that combination with Exchange for years and years and years, these things are so much superior, so much better. So yes, I think with care, absolutely. Is that fair? You notice that was a real political answer. You guys wouldn't know anything about politics in this country, would you? Oh yeah, you've got lots of politicians. Yeah, they're good ones, aren't they? Forming governments, that is. Any other questions? Sir? Ouch. Okay. Okay, so the question is, of the companies that I know who are using Office 365 groups today, what are they saying? Is that? Okay. Well, clearly some of the issues that I've spoken about have come up because that's how I've learned about the issues and that's why I think they are issues. So that's that response to that. I think generally people are very positive about them because they see that this is a fantastic way of getting work done. And I've been using them myself. I mean, I use these things every day to run projects. I just find it very, instead of setting up a distribution group and a SharePoint team site and all the rest of it, just set up a group, there it is. Now, once they support external access, they'll be so much more powerful. But I really like what's coming here in terms of that combination of working between SharePoint and Exchange and the extensions like Planner. Planner is great. Planner is just, it's limited in terms of graphing, it's limited in terms of some of the extensibility. And there are other things that you could complain about, but you know, as a V1 product, it's absolutely great. And it really does add to groups. So I think what people are saying, just to answer the question, is that lots of good things are there, but there are some pitfalls. If you stay away from the pitfalls, you'll be happy. And there are some tenants out there today that have tens of thousands of groups. Don't know how they manage them, but they have tens of thousands of groups, mostly in the educational space. Anybody else? Micah Van Hornbeek is about to take me off the stage. Anybody else? Going, going. Okay, listen, guys, have a great conference and enjoy yourself for the rest of the day.